send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. More analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Happy, happy, happy. We're so happy. Welcome to Baseball Central for Wednesday, June 22nd. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Happy, happy day. Happy day. Happy Thursday. No, it's Tuesday.
Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
Pick one.
Happy day. Everything's happy. You happy?
Living a dream.
I'm happy.
Good.
Think John Gibbons is happy this morning? Yeah, probably. He is.
Yeah. Did you see when Kevin Pillar tried to steal third?
Yeah, Gibby was not happy. your Toronto Blue Jays, 4-2 losers to the Arizona Diamondbacks last night. By the way, before we get started, worst uniforms you have ever seen in your life, the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, there's a worse than any minor league uniforms I've ever put on. Yes.
Yeah.
I've never seen a uniform that bad.
Yeah.
You'd have to have a spotting scope to read the name on the back of their jersey, which is just an
absolute joke.
That's the whole reason I'm putting the name on the back of the jersey, right? Is so fans that don't know who that is can tell and see, oh, that's Barker.
I said it was like the Miami Marlins jersey mated with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim jersey and then got thrown in the wash with
you got to figure there's like 7 or 8 people sitting around going, man, this is perfect.
Yeah, that's what you said. We need to add some teal. Just a minute. Look. We've got all this teal fabric here. Let's add it. It'll make it better. More teal.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
anyhow, I guess.
Whatever. But as bad as they look, and they are the worst uniforms in the history of sports, as bad as the uniforms look, give it up to the Diamondbacks. They beat the Blue Jays 4-2. Mr. Corbin was pretty good.
Yep.
Jay's new lineup, kind of the forced lineup, made its debut. Ezekiel Carrera got on base a couple of times. Devin Travis, ball in play a couple of times. Josh Donaldson got on, hit into the momentum killing double play, insofar as the Blue Jays were concerned. Huh. But really, what this came down to is Marco Estrada walked 3 batters. 2 of them scored.
Yep.
He gave up a couple of home runs, and that was it, or at least one home run that I can see. I can't read my own writing.
Yeah, he gave up the home run to Tomas in the 4th inning, I think.
Which got out weeks.
Fast. Thanks, Travis.
And then the other home run was, what are you thanking Travis for?
Well, he helped us out.
And the other home run, which was given up by, I believe, Jesse Chavez.
Fastball center cut.
Yes.
That'll happen in the show.
Why was Patrick Corbin so effective against this lineup?
Well, he had a good approach. It's the first time I've seen a left-handed pitcher come in and actually pitch backwards. He would get ahead of the right-handed hitters with breaking balls in. He basically said, I'm going to try and get ahead of you because I know this team's very aggressive at home. They're coming off that off day. They're facing 3 lefties in a row the next 4 days. Mm-hmm. They want to be confident. They want to get off to a good start. They're going to be aggressive. So what's Corbin do? He starts flipping breaking balls early in. So if a right-handed hitter does hit it fair, it's going to be that weak ground ball to third, which the Blue Jays did a lot of. I think Corbin had 12 ground ball outs yesterday, which is a lot. And then he would put guys away with fastballs in. So it was a great approach. He threw the breaking ball one-sided. So left-handers, he'd go away with the breaking ball. He'd go in with the breaking ball to right-handers. It was a great approach. It worked. You can tell why his home and road splits are that different. I've never seen him, obviously, pitch at home, but he was 0-5 with an ERA over 7 at home. Opponent's average is 3.15. Opponent's average on the road was 2.27 coming into that game last night. Obviously, it's went down a little bit, and his ERA is going to go down on the road. It was 2.6. He obviously knows how to pitch to guys on the road. It's
okay. What could the difference be between pitching at home and pitching on the road?
I think playing in Arizona, the ball flies there. You try to be too perfect. You try and be too fine. You leave balls out over the plate. You don't have a good approach. I think it gets in guys' heads. That's the biggest thing. you get between your ears and you understand that, hey, if I leave a ball out over the plate, I'm going to get hurt. Not saying the Rogers Center is not like that, but you can tell he's real comfortable pitching on the road, and he had a plan. You have a plan. You try. Rogers Center, what pitchers need to do is get guys out on their front foot. Mm-hmm. And that's what he did a lot of, because you obviously, when you're out on your front foot, you hit the ball weaker. You don't hit it as hard. You hit it off the sweet spot of the bat. That's the ultimate goal. And he did a very good job of that. It's very hard for me to give credit to a pitcher on occasion. But last night,
you don't
have
like
to take,
pitchers for the most
no,
part.
No, they tried to take your money. Whenever I played, that's what they did. They tried to take my money because they'd get me out. So it's hard. But Patrick Corbin, take your hat off to him. He beat the Blue Jays last night. It wasn't that the Blue Jays didn't have a good approach, whatever. Patrick Corbin just made good pitches when he needed to make them. He beat them.
The other thing, we don't see the Diamondbacks a great deal, obviously, but they played some pretty good defense too.
Yeah, well, again, it gets back to their pitching is.
And when you have a guy like that on the mound, you're going to play good defense.
For the most part, he was working quick. He was, you know, getting it, not spending a lot of time going through signs. He was working quick. He was throwing strikes. That's what it's all about. He's throwing strikes. You saw Estrada last night, to me, for the first time, whether he was hurt or not the entire game. He just looked different. He couldn't find the feel of the changeup, which is a huge deal for him. Location wasn't as good as it has been.
He didn't throw – I wrote this down, and I actually watched the – I kind of charted this game. He didn't throw his first curve until, I want to say, the sixth inning. That can't be right.
Yeah, he doesn't need to throw curves.
That can't be right. You know, watching him pitch last night, in a way, it was kind of a relief, because I was sitting next to Shine when we're watching him pitch, and when John Gibbons took him out, we both kind of looked at each other, and Shine said, "Wow, 88 pitches." And I think we both thought he didn't look comfortable in the mound.
No,
and of course, as we found out later,
you know what he did? He didn't look like he was finishing his pitches,
which was a back problem. 100%.
But I'll say this: whenever he misses with the changeup, it's always down, which is a tremendous way to miss. If you're going to miss, you notice whenever he has trouble finding the release point on that changeup, it's always when he's missing, it's in the dirt. It's down and away off the plate, which you can't get hurt like that. It's my point. Mm-hmm. When you leave the changeup up in the big leagues, you're going to get hurt. So that's a plus for him, and hopefully he's okay, because the Blue Jays need him. You know, it's the way he's pitching and can command the strike zone most of the time and give you quality start after quality start, keep you in games and give you a chance to win. If something does happen, that's going to be a little bit of a hard loss.
Yeah, well, and we should mention, not to be too alarmist, he has had this issue.
Sure, but anytime you're dealing with
going back to when Barry Davis asked John Gibbons that question about.
That went well, right.
Yeah, that was real good.
Well, you know, Gibby looked about like he did when Pillar tried to steal third.
Yeah, what the hell was up with that, by the way?
Yeah, I don't know.
Kevin Pillar, if you don't know what we're talking about, Kevin Pillar tried to steal third.
After his big double.
After his big double, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was
an RBI double.
Two-run double.
There is one out. Kevin Pillar is in third. Darwin Barney strikes out. And Kevin Pillar is thrown out trying to steal third, which...
got caught up in the moment a little bit, I think. And
yeah. John Gibbons, and it was a...
Yeah, I'm sure there was a conversation had somewhere during or after sometime. That, you know, there's just certain situations when you're behind in the game. Why?
Yeah. Don't make that last out.
Well,
at
why?
Third base. Yeah.
Because, you know, you're down a couple of runs. Why? That's the whole
I wanted to talk a little bit, Kevin, about the home plate umpire. And I don't want to turn this into a hammering in the umpire thing, because that's not what I'm about. Young umpire. Uh-huh. His strike zone was inconsistent, but Buck talked about this in particular in the first inning, and I found it kind of fascinating. And he was talking about, he was talking about how initially, and the leadoff hitter John Segura drew a walk, and his point initially was that, when you get down to the at bat in the first inning with Paul Goldschmidt, there's a man in second after stolen base. Goldschmidt is at the plate, and he talked about how there was a 1-1 pitch that was clearly a strike. It was called a ball. Russ Martin called for that pitch again, got it, 2-2 pitch. called for the same pitch again, same spot, was called a ball 3-2, and then struck out Goldschmidt on a change. But I found it interesting because Buck did a good job of breaking down what was going on between the catcher and the home plate umpire. Well, kind of, not just that, but kind of, you know, I thought that was a strike. We're going back. We got to get, essentially what Russ Martin is saying there is, my guy has to get that.
Yeah.
And I just, I find that type of stuff interesting. I find the way an umpire and a catcher, the relationship between the two, you know, develops over a game. Yeah. The reason I mention that, because you as a hitter, were you aware of the catcher-umpire dynamic? I know what the plate you're concentrating on, but is there a lot of talk?
100%.
Explain to me what it would sound like.
Well, just like me and you sitting here talking, basically it's like I'm hearing the conversation too. And there's numerous times that I would step out and look back and say, you two done? Like, enough's enough.
Really?
Like,
okay.
Yeah, because
Even in the majors?
100%, because I'm tired of hearing... I'm up there trying to hit a fastball when I usually played in the big leagues late in my career. It was when I was facing guys that throw 100.
Right.
I don't need to hear you talk, really. Yeah. That would be the thing between a catcher. A good catcher, the more you talk, that usually means your pitcher's struggling. He's having trouble doing something, which is never a bad thing when you're the hitter. And you know that
you
a guy's
pick up on that. You
100%.
Go.
You know now the guy's really trying to be fine. He's trying to aim a pitch. He may leave the ball on the plate. But you get tired of hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the catcher and the umpire can overdo it. And I've often, there's been numerous times that I've stepped out and say, hey, take him to dinner. Enough. Let's just, you know, I'm trying to hit this thing too. You two can have this conversation later. And then it would be sort of that thing. And then the umpire's having a conversation with me and I start having the conversation with the catcher. So, you know, when you start having those conversations, it sort of gets out of control. But, you know, I think Russell, this is where Russell comes into play, being a veteran catcher, sort of been there and done it kind of thing. It's very quiet. It's so like, hey, where did you get that at? Hey, you know, he's going to live right there. He's not going to say something like,
oh, hey, for bleep's sake, what the hell are you?
He's not going to say that. First of all, it's probably the first inning, second inning, somewhere early. He knows that his pitcher, like you said, needs to get that pitch down and away on the corner. Because that, hey, let's face it, that's where Marco Estrada lives. When he when he gets ahead with the fastball, he can expand with everything else and get guys to chasing. You have to have that pitch. So it's more of a quiet, where do you got that? I think it's a strike. Can I get this next time? He's going to live right here.
Well, he actually say that.
Can you look at it a little bit longer?
Well, he actually, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, can you give me that next time?
I will say this. I bet Josh Tolley couldn't say that as much as Russell Martin.
Okay.
It's a veteran. You know, sometimes you have to earn the right to be able to talk more. I'll say it that way. I'll say this.
Yeah.
Whenever I played in the big leagues, September, early in my career, my numbers were big.
Mm-hmm.
On the back of my jersey was in the 60s because, you know, that's what you do. Most of the smaller numbers are already taken, and you're just going to have to wear it and have a big number. I can remember, for the life of me, I can't remember the umpire, but an umpire struck me or called strike two or struck me out, and I turned around and said, hey, I got that away. Where do you got that? And he said, hey, don't worry about it, 65. Just trying to basically tell me until your number gets a little bit smaller, you're not allowed to say things like that to me. So it's sort of conversations back and forth like that. And it's all about you have to earn the right to have certain conversations. And Russell's earned that right to talk a little bit longer and try and get his pitchers certain pitches and get to expand zones and things like that.
We've got a third. Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet.ca has joined us.
Well, we got better looking in here anyway.
There you go. Is that working now?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Look at all this preparation, eh, Barks? Jeez.
Hey, I am you never know. You try not to get caught with your pants down. Okay, that's basically what I try to do in here. Okay?
Look like DeMarlo Hale, man, with all the...
That's awesome.
Look at all that.
Yeah, you got to.
With all the... you got a shift there?
Huh?
Yeah, you got a shift written down there?
Spray charts and stuff?
No, I don't do that. No, I'm a straight-up guy, especially with two strikes.
Yeah, we just... That was an interesting discussion about the back and forth between... between an umpire and a catcher.
It's sort of like a nickname, Jeff. I'll say that. In baseball, in any sport, certain guys like LeBron James, nicknamed the King, okay, well, you earned that right to have that nickname.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same thing when you get to catcher, umpire relationship, you earn the right to talk a little bit more.
Any catcher stand out to you as being particularly chatty? Just before we return the focus to the Blue Jays. Any guy who just wouldn't shut up?
Not really, no, because that's when most umpires would call timeout, walk in front of the mm-hmm. catcher, act like he's cleaning the plate off mm-hmm. with his head down, and basically say in bleeping ways,
shut up,
I've had enough, or you're going to go to the showers in a hurry.
The Molinas talked a lot, don't they? Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, again, it gets back to certain guys have earned the right yeah. and no, been but there I mean, and done to, it, too.
Is there a lot of talk between the catcher and the hitter?
Yeah, well, that's yeah. never a good thing.
No.
That's usually me. Normally when that happens, that's usually the hitter telling the catcher, hey, look, seriously, mm-hmm. shut up. I've trying to hit this guy that throws really super mm-hmm. hard and has a crazy slider. I don't hear you talk. And all then right. it gets back to, oh, yeah? And then it's chirping back and forth and getting the box, and then that's when the umpire jumps in. It's sort of fun to, you know, on occasion. They always say, you know, and don't always look who's pitching. Look who's catching.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get in the catcher's head, too, and then he starts calling fastballs because he wants to show you up. And mm-hmm. I like fastballs, that kind yeah. of thing.
The pitcher doesn't appreciate it either, eh? When the hitter and the catcher are talking to each other.
Well, it gets back to yeah. everybody wants to be in a rhythm. You know, everybody yeah. wants to get in the flow of the game. And when pitchers are, you know, watching batter, catcher sort of get chirping, yeah. and it's never a good thing.
You want your catcher to be locked in.
100%.
The Jays lost 4-2 last night. Kevin Pillar made another one of his catches.
Superman.
Arden Zwelling broke it down on sportsnet.ca. How Kevin Pillar made one of his best catches in just 4.4 seconds. There was, of course, video attached. You know what? I got to admit, he does this so often, Arden, that it was a great catch last night, and my first reaction was kind of,
Right. That's what everyone says, right?
You know what I'm saying?
It's almost routine.
And unless he's lying, and you know, unless he's flying flat out parallel to the ground, I'm like, yeah, whatever.
But while that one maybe didn't have the fireworks of some of the catches, I think that was one of the hardest ones he's had to make.
Well, your story's great. I mean, Michael Saunders' comment about the sound. Because yeah. we don't hear the sound where we are. We don't hear the sound at all. You know, and people look at that and go, it's a padded wall. Well, folks, there's something behind that padded wall as well.
Yeah.
That's not a hockey board that gives either.
No.
That's a stiff wall.
No, what do you think? And I know you've talked to him about this a lot, but what is it about Kevin Pillar? Because we've had guys in this team who were terrified of walls. But what is it about Kevin Pillar that literally makes him? He's unafraid of hitting anything, anybody to make a catch. I mean, he's just totally unafraid.
That's what he's had to do to get to the big leagues.
Corey Patterson, right. I'm sorry, was the guy I was thinking of. The Jays had right. Corey Patterson. Corey Patterson was scared. I mean, he had a thing about going near the wall.
He was a little timid around the wall. I would
he
say.
Was very timid around the wall. He would pull up and let the ball bounce off the wall, which is why he didn't play very long
all right.
for the Blue Jays. Anyhow, sorry, continue.
This is what Kevin Pillar's had to do to get to the big leagues. You're talking about a 32nd pick, like 970th or whatever it is, right? Like, and you know, you can talk to, I've talked to a lot of coordinators throughout the Blue Jays system. Kenny Graham is a guy who had him for a while in the Appalachian League and in Lansing. And, you know, he said Kevin Pillar has had to work for everything that he's gotten in this game. Nothing has been given to this guy at all. You know, even you look at the beginning of last year, you know, Dalton Pompey was the starting center fielder for your Toronto Blue Jays in April over Kevin Pillar. And Kevin Pillar was the fourth outfielder when, you know, Kevin Pillar had been in the organization longer. He was older, you know, he had more experience. And they handed that job to Dalton Pompey instead of Kevin Pillar. He's had to fight and just do that extra thing for everything that he's gotten in this game. And I know a lot of fans will get on him for plate discipline and get on him for, you know, swinging at breaking pitches in, you know, in the other batter's box or wherever they are. But this is a guy whose swing right now, you know, guys in the Blue Jays system will tell you is miles, miles ahead of where it was when he first broke in out of college. They feel like he can continue to improve.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing, Kevin, you could talk to this. The thing about Kevin Pillar is, I mean, right now, the flaw that I think a lot of people see in his game is just that he loves swinging. I mean, he'll swing at everything. But in terms of the swing that he had when he came up here and the changes he's made to it, mean, it was remarkable. And it's just, I really do think, and I know Buck Martinez is a guy who's been on Pilar's side right from the get-go. He really liked Pilar. I think there's still room for this guy to improve. I mean, yeah. I don't know if he's ever going to become, an all-star hitter, but I think his batting average can get a little better. I think there's power in there. I think we haven't seen, honestly, I don't think we've seen the best of Kevin Pillar offensively.
Yeah, I talked to Eric Owens, the assistant hitting coach in spring training, and I said, we were standing around the batting cage, and I said, who's the best hitter on this team? Kevin Pillar walked in the batting cage, and he pointed at him and said, he will be the best hitter on this team. That's big praise. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what's going to be the difference? And he said, pitch selection. Basically, this guy has five tools. He has a nickname, Superman, for a reason, because Superman thinks he can do anything. Meaning I can hit the ball. If it bounces, I think I can hit the ball that's over my head. He said, when we can zone him in and basically say, pick one, split it in half. I'm either going to swing at it away or I'm going to swing at it in. I'm not going to swing at both. He said, when we start getting him to do that, Kevin Pillar is going to take it to the next level.
And he's learning from guys like Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, the guys who really study video and the guys who really work on their approach like that and, you know, really study other pitchers' tendencies. And he's getting better at that kind of stuff. I don't think he did that stuff when he came out of college, but he's getting better at that now that he's around a professional environment where this is how these hitters operate on a day-to-day basis.
And, you know, it's funny because I know that there are people in the city, and, I mean, I hear them, and, you know, there's – anytime a guy makes – a lot of great catches. It seems to be a natural reaction with us. I don't know if it's putting a guy in a pedestal and taking it down, but you start looking at the catch and going, okay, is he overdoing it? Is he showboating a bit? And, you know, there are people who are saying, yeah, he's making great catches, but, you know, Devon White would have got to that ball easily. Well, and my reaction to that is always, yeah, because Devon White's faster. He probably would get. Marcus Grissom would get to a lot of those balls easier than Kevin Pillar.
Yeah.
But Kevin Pillar is still getting to the balls. It's like not every center fielder is going to be a track star, you know. And that's the way I kind of look at it.
Outs and out, the way I look at it.
Yeah,
right?
But that's the thing I look at Kevin Pillar. He has to make a lot of those plays because that's the way he plays and that is the skill set.
Oh, what about a pitching staff? You talk to the pitchers around this team, and when he's making the catch, you saw Marco Estrada yesterday after he made that catch. The look on his face is just – it's like, hey, I've been out here struggling for whatever reason, whether his back was hurting, whatever the case was, and you make a play for me like that, that means I'm going to bear down the next pitch and get these guys out. That's what he brings. To me, it's special. I'm impressed because I'm a guy that used to play and couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. When you can't do something and you watch a guy that can do it every night, it's impressive.
That catch last night, I mean, that's the toughest play for an outfielder because it's hit right at him and it's hit low.
Yes.
So like you can't get your bearings on it. You get no angle on the ball. So you can't tell how much ground is covering, how fast it's going.
And your first reaction would have to be, what if this goes over my head? Because it's coming at me.
Well, you just have to make a decision like that, just instantly and stick with it. And Kevin Pillar's decision was to run back. You see him adjust his route on the replay because he's like, oh, hey, it's actually going this way. And then, you know, the wall presence as well. It's remarkable.
I also want to talk about your article on the bullpen, breaking down the recent improvement of the Blue Jays bullpen. Because if you talk to Jays fans, talk to reporters, anybody, everybody says the issue with this team is the bullpen. I think we could probably say that it's still an issue, but statistically, it's gotten a lot better, hasn't it, in recent games. We may not want to admit that necessarily, but it has gotten better.
Some guys have made a turnaround. You know, Jesse Chavez, he's gotten hit around his last two, but before that, he had really improved his cutter location a lot. He made a little mechanical tweak that he picked up on video with Pete Walker that helped him locate his cutter better. That's helped. Drew Storen, I think, has swallowed a pretty bitter pill in that he can't throw 94, 95 anymore. He's lost a couple of miles per hour off his velocity. So now you watch him, two-seam fastballs. That's the primary pitch. Two-seamers instead of four-seamers, and then off of the two-seamer, the changeup, which comes from the same lane and has very similar action, but there's that like 7 mile per hour difference there. Mm-hmm. And he's going to kind of use those two pitches now with the slider working off of it to try to get hitters out, which is something we've never seen Drew Storen do that in his career. Mm-hmm. And it's because he can't throw 95 anymore. He just can't. And he's accepted that. And now he's going to be kind of this sinker baller guy. And you see the last six outings hasn't allowed an earned run.
So we saw Roberto Osuna last night. We had some concern about him. I think the Jays have basically been resting him for a while.
Yeah.
He looked awful.
Yeah, I was about to ask
night.
You guys. I know he changed a little bit of his when he's going in his windup and he does the little paw at the top. Yeah. I was going to ask you guys what you thought of that. Do you like it? Do you dislike it? Is it something that can work? If it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing? Or are you guys for it?
I don't see why Roberto Osuna has to change anything he's doing, really. Yeah. But I think, like, Johnny Cueto has started this, like, whole trend in the major leagues right now. You saw Stroman trying to do it at the beginning of the year. Yeah. The guys are trying to vary their deliveries.
Well, and Osuna has done that at times this year. He's tried to quick pitch.
Yep. He doesn't need anything else.
Nah.
He's fine.
Yeah. I was thinking about this at spring training when I think it was actually Joe Siddle pointed out that Osuna, had been working on a quick pitch and that Stroman is doing it as well. That's fine, I guess. But I think when the games start, you've got to sort of rely on what your strengths are. The one thing I will say with Roberto Osuna, I may look at it a little differently, is that, and I've talked to John Gibbons about Osuna a couple of times, and he talks about how much as you talk about a hitter knowing about himself, he says Osuna has got, just for a guy that young, understands what he has to do on a particular day better than a lot of veteran relievers Gibbons has been around. He talked about how he'll change his warm-up. Depending on how he feels, he'll vary his warm-up. He'll vary his bullpen routine. So I don't really have that much of an issue with him experimenting
Change is such a difficult thing for a young player. I tried to change. It never worked for me. It's basically, the old saying is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. Well, when you get beat, I said this all the time about Stroman, flipping breaking balls and getting beat with secondary pitches. Why do that? Well, if you're going to get beat with your best stuff. And then when you start flirting around with different ways of holding your leg in the air, well, you're messing with, you're changing.
The one issue with that is, pitching coaches will tell you, we kind of draw the line when guys start to do things that may have a physical impact on them, which, if you alter your delivery, you're going to do that. But I don't know. It's also for Roberto Osuna. This last week was probably, I don't know if I'd say the most difficult week he's had as a closer, but it's one of the few times since he's been a closer that people have been kind of looking at him and going, is the arm okay? And maybe he feels that he has to try
something. What's he do there? Well, he throws 96 to 99 with a great changeup. He's added the slider. Why mess with it?
Yeah.
It could be that simple.
It is that simple.
Yeah.
As long as he doesn't become too much of a dabbler. And that's one of my concerns with Marcus Stroman is I just wonder if this guy's got too many people talking to him right now.
Right.
I get back to that statement Ross Atkins made at the golf tournament. And they said in my show, I talked to a couple of guys yesterday with the organization, both of whom played. And the one guy said, hey, I have no problem with what they're doing. The other guy said, just let the kid, it should be the kid, the catcher, and his pitching coach. That should be those should be the guys discussing what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
And
sometimes you got to have selective hearing, Jeff. One ear and out the other.
I'm good at that.
Whenever I was a player, it took me a very long time. I had to get older and fail at certain things to basically, when somebody's talking, nod their head and act like you're listening, and it goes in one ear and out the other, and then you take what you like, and you apply it, and you take what you didn't like, and don't listen to it.
Before we let Arden run, the lineup that John Gibbons ran out yesterday, Devin Travis batting second and DHing, Ezekiel Carrero leading off, Donaldson third. It appears as if this is the way it's going to be. John Gibbons has said he's going to experimenting, going to try a few things, are going to ride this out. I think we'll probably at some point see Devin Travis up in the leadoff spot unless he just craters. What did you think of the lineup? I'll ask Arden first.
Okay.
Did you like the looks of it? I mean, results aside, did you like the looks of the lineup?
My thing that I don't like about it is you're messing with that Donaldson and Encarnacion at 2-3, and I don't like messing with that. Yeah, if you want to move Devin Travis up, move him into leadoff right now. Why? For the benefit of Ezekiel Carrera staying leadoff, like he's been fine. Mm-hmm. But they've been very selective about where they've used him before Jose Bautista was hurt. You get him into favorable places to have success. Now that you're going to see Ezekiel Carrera every day, I feel like the numbers are going to trend downwards from where they've been. Why are you messing with Donaldson and Encarnacion at 2-3 for the benefit of Ezekiel Carrera?
Yeah, I think no Bautista is added to that. They want to get more guys on base in front of the two guys you mentioned. That's the only reason he's doing. Mm-hmm. He thinks Devin Travis is getting hotter. Ezekiel Carrera has obviously been getting on base, hitting .414, leading off, that kind of thing. The only thing that stands out to me is the DH role. You see Donaldson DHing, who is okay at it on occasion. Donaldson's is one guy is very into the game, needs to be playing third base. He sort of eliminates the hitting when he does play third base. When he's not playing third and DHing, he's a little sporadic. He's not so much into the game like he is other places. Devin Travis never done it. Mm-hmm. If you've never DH'd, it's very hard to do. That's, you know, to me, there's one DH on this team. That's Edwin. I understand on certain occasions he's got to play first, but something to me there's got to – he is what he is what I'm trying to say. If he's a DH most of the time, let him DH. That's what I'm saying, and you work around that and don't put guys in certain spots that don't know how to do it. You know, you hear Devin Travis asking how to DH. Well, that's because it's hard.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Arden.
Well, I think getting Devin Travis back up to the top of the lineup is something – like it makes a lot of sense right now because you've seen that kind of right-center approach recently. Like you, and if you look at kind of his – Barker loves spray charts. If you look at his spray charts, when he's at his best, he's going, you know, center right field. That's where he's hitting the ball. He's going the other way with authority. You know, if it's a lot of his home runs have been pull, a lot of his doubles are to the opposite field. And we started seeing that in the Phillies series, in the Baltimore series. And you know, I think it's been carrying over. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense to bump him up, I think. But yeah, I agree. Let him play second base.
Me too.
No, I talking to Ross Atkins yesterday, I really kind of wonder if Dalton Pompey were not, you know, on the concussion protocol right now. I wonder if there wouldn't have even been some thought about bringing him up
to play every day.
He certainly got, one of the things Ross said, he said this would have been perfect. You know, we can't right now because of the concussion protocol. He said this would have been the perfect time.
Would he lead off?
Don't know if he would lead off. Boy, that's
maybe against lefties, right? Now we can't argue the way Ezekiel Carrera's even faced left-handers. He's having good approaches. He has good at bats. He's basically doing what the pitcher gives him. If it's away, he hits it away. If it's in, he tries to pull it. It's that kind of thing. He's having great at bats. But, you know, there's going to be a time where he runs into some bumps in the road versus left-handers. Who fills that spot?
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty clear that they're going to give this a trial. The next step will be if this doesn't work out, I think you'll probably see Dalton Pompey up here. And then, I don't know, maybe, you know, this team's going to have another outfielder next year. And I'm not saying that you go out and add next year's starting left fielder or next year's starting right fielder at the trade deadline. But I think you certainly keep your ears open because you're going to need at least one more outfielder next year.
You might need a couple because Michael Saunders might be pricing his way out.
You brought up the point, how do you manufacture runs when Batista's not in the lineup? Because you're going to have to do that, right? Yeah. The two guys in the middle, and Donaldson and Edwin, aren't going to stay hot and carry the team forever. Somehow you're going to have to score runs, manufacture runs. How do you do that?
With Bautista, you're really missing that on base is the thing.
Right? You are.
That's what you're missing the base. It's not 100%. He doesn't have a tremendous average this year. Still hitting for some power, but it's that on base presence.
Pitchers are afraid.
Arden, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, fellas.
The article that we were talking about, there's two, breaking down the recent improvement of the Blue Jays bullpen, but the Arden's breakdown of Kevin Pillar's catch, it's like he's calling newspapers TikTok, which is kind of, kind of guides you through A, B, C, D of the catch. It's really a terrific piece. I have no idea how the hell you wrote it in Deadline. Thank you for doing this.
I'm that good.
Yeah. So, you know that commercial? That commercial you guys did, I'm beginning to believe that's more than a commercial. Yeah. Arden, thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks, fellas.
Be back with more Baseball Central and Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. Don't forget the Blue Jays and Diamondbacks. 4:07 first pitch today. Marco Estrada did something last night, by the way. He did lose 4-2 to the Diamondbacks, but we would be remiss if we didn't mention that Marco Estrada became the first pitcher in baseball history, well, since 1893, when the pitcher's mound was set at 60 feet 6 inches, the first pitcher to go.
Were you there?
Stop. Six plus innings. Stop it. He set a record by going six plus innings, five hits or less, 11 consecutive outings since 1893.
That's awesome. 88 miles an hour too, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Up, down, in and out. He's got the changeup working.
Yep.
It's over.
This, by the way, was a song that came out in 1893. What's it called again? The George J. Gaskin.
Wow.
After the Ball.
That's awesome.
I didn't even know they had, like, Derek Brandeis says the Jay-Z of his time.
It's winding that up, right?
Yeah. Anyhow, I remember the day that song came out. I remember exactly where I was.
Yeah, I know.
I was busy shoeing a horse when that song came out.
Huh.
It is Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Well, I know. Travis came through. 11:42:32, and he drops 3 pages of notes on us.
You didn't need them before now.
That's great. It tells us everything
that we've already talked about.
Bartolo Colon, by the way. Well, we didn't talk about this because then everybody loves him some Bartolo Colon, and God knows there's a lot of Bartolo Colon to love. Oh, that didn't sound right. Anyhow, he exited last night's start in the first inning after taking a line drive to the thumb. X-rays were negative, officially diagnosed as a thumb contusion. Very important, though, because it is his eating thumb, the important thumb you use when you... Just kidding. Anyhow, Bartolo Colon, X-rays negative. You know that Steven Strasburg was scratched Monday night against the Dodgers, diagnosed with a strained back. He's expected to make his next start. Zach Wheeler of the Mets, this is a little concerning. He's had a setback in his recovery from Tommy John surgery, will not throw a simulated inning as scheduled this week. The only reason I'm throwing that out is Zach Wheeler's a guy whose name is all over the trade block.
When he's healthy, he's nasty.
He's
very good.
Filthy.
Yes.
Your all-star voting update. And I know Kevin hates this, but Russ Martin. Really? Russ Martin is third in catching, a tidy 2.07 million votes behind Salvador Perez. Eric Hosmer of Kansas City is at first base, leading 600,000 up in Miguel Cabrera. Justin Smoke is 1.53 million back of him. Jose Bautista is leading the voting for second base. Xander Bogaerts is leading the balloting at shortstop. He is 1.3 million up in Troy Tulowitzki, who's third. Josh Donaldson is second in third base voting, 510,000 votes back of Manny Machado. Jose Bautista is in sixth. He's 130,000 votes back of Mookie Betts, who holds down the final outfield spot. And David Ortiz, no surprise, leading the DH voting. He is 1.75 million up in Kendrys Morales of Kansas City. Edwin is in third place, approximately 1.86 million back of Ortiz.
Hey, before, I know we had something else to talk about, me and you, but real quick, when you mentioned Russell Martin, something, it just made me think of something. Russell Martin has had 39 attempts on stolen bases.
Yes.
33 of them have been successful. Is that an issue?
100%. It's not all on the pitchers. Last night's stolen base was on Marco Estrada. Segura's stolen base was on Marco Estrada.
He picked the change up.
Picked the change up, and Marco didn't even look.
Okay, why do you say that's not all on the pitcher?
I said it is. It's on the pitcher.
Yesterday it was.
Yeah, yesterday it was on. Most of the time it's not all on the pitcher. I don't think stolen bases.
How do you think they fixed that?
Last
year I think they were first in I want to say baseball, Travis.
I mean, I'll tell you.
American League.
I'll tell you how you fix it, and people are going to light up my you know what in Twitter, but the only way you're going to fix it is by getting a bona fide backup catcher in here, cuz Josh Tolley ain't going to do it. And if you're asking...
Well, you know that's not going to happen.
Well, I'm not entirely certain it isn't going to happen. I can see this team eventually having 3 catchers. I think it's just a way they're going to have to go. The choice is very simple. You have 3 catchers, or you have a suboptimal Russ Martin as your everyday catcher. That, to me, it's that simple.
Here's what I'm going to say to that. I'm going to say there's going to be a point in the time where you put the best bat in the lineup. Russell Martin's going to have to start catching R.A. Dickey again.
Oh. God help us.
Say what you want.
Right now and lighting a candle.
You can say what you want, but Josh Tolley is not bringing anything to the table, and you can't really blame him for that because he never plays except once a week, and when he does play, it's against one of the best pitchers usually in baseball, and usually that guy's left-handed. So, to me, when it comes right down to it, if you're going to go out and get a catcher, Josh Tolley's not your third guy. Going to have to be Russell Martin, whoever you get, Russell Martin's catching Ari Dickey.
And you also have to remember that you're going to need another catcher next year anyhow.
I'm just saying, this thing of rolling out because that's his catcher, and obviously it is, it's just not going to work.
Well, it's
like they're not the hitting team they were last year, and they can't afford to keep running guys out.
100%.
And having that guy, nothing against Josh Tolley. I want to say that because he's caught between a rock and a hard spot.
Look, Josh Tolley is here for a reason.
100%.
And I don't hold that against Josh Tolley.
No, it's not his fault, but I'm saying you just can't keep doing this if you're in that organization. Just the runs and that time of the game when it matters as much as it's starting to matter is a big deal.
I want to throw out some congratulations, by the way. There are 5 members of the Lansing Lugnuts going to the Midwest League All-Star Game. John awesome. Harris, Juan Kelly, Andrew Guiot, and Angel Perdomo, I believe is how he pronounces. He's a left-handed pitcher. And Dusty Isaacs, a right-handed pitcher. So kudos to those 5.
Only made one All-Star team in 16 seasons.
Which team was that? Triple-A?
Louisville Bats. I made it with those guys. I went to Toledo to play with, that's where the Toledo Bloodhens play. Hit a home run.
Did they have a home run derby?
No, they did, but I wasn't in it. No.
One All-Star.
Do you remember Kevin Witt?
Yes.
Kevin Witt had hit just an awful amount of home runs. That's what he did when he was in Triple-A. He was one of the best home run hitters ever in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
And he was really, really good. I think he'd either hit a home run or 2 home runs, and I was supposed to come in after him. And I said, uh-uh. You know, because I was good friends with him at the time, and I said, no, let's try and get the MVP because you've earned it. I think he got another hit. He ended up getting the MVP, but I came in for him, and I hit a home run, which is kind of cool.
Hey, you know what time it is?
Oh, here we go.
Wait, I got something. Hold on. Okay.
Do you smell that baguette?
Yeah.
It's nice and soft and fresh. It's time. We're going to cut off your microphone.
Yes. You need to ask before
you
speak.
Monsieur Barker, would you like to see my gray poupon?
Oh, boy.
Maybe my crepe Suzette?
Is this your most favorite thing you do?
Yeah,
honestly?
It is. Anyhow, it is time for Kevin Barker's Euro picks.
So much pressure.
It is.
Boy.
We've got 4 matches for you to pick and 2 minutes to do it in.
Quick, quick, quick.
Ireland and Italy.
I'm going to go Italy 2-0.
That's a good one.
Yeah, you know.
Italy won. Probably nil. Italy.
Yeah, I don't do ties.
Portugal and Hungary. Ooh, a lot of people waiting for this one.
I'm going to go Portugal 2-1.
Wow.
Bam. Yes. I know who makes me sound good.
Austria and Iceland.
Ooh. Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to go. What was the first one?
Austria.
I'm going to go Austria 1-0.
Okay. And then the match, a lot riding on it, both in terms of the standings and also emotionally. Belgium and Sweden, Kevin Barker.
Okay, this is a tough one.
It is a tough one
Belgium is a really good team.
Yes.
But this could be Ibra's last match for his country. Love to see him go out on top. I'm going to say Sweden
in an upset.
2-1.
You can pick a score other than 2-1, you know.
What? I want to go like 7-2, but you can't do that,
right? Only 2-2-1s today.
He only took 2. By the way, those of you who asked, Kevin Barker's record. There have been 19 matches so far.
Yeah.
You have won 10.
Of course I did.
You've only lost 3.
Of course.
Unfortunately, there's 6 draws, and you refuse to pick draws.
Never.
And if you were a gambler, you would have lost those matches. It's not real good, Kevin, to be quite honest.
Well, I'm not a gambler. So I'm okay.
But 10 wins.
Basically, I'm 10-3. Ask me. That's what I am.
Well, no, there's 6 other matches.
I don't even think about those. 10-3 is what my record is.
But the other matches have to be accounted for.
Mm. In your world, not mine.
All right.
6 draws? Who would call a draw? Who wants to watch? I can't come on this show and say, watch 90 minutes of 1-1. Well, really?
The way of the world.
Or nil.
That's Trev.
It's the way of the world. It's yeah, dry. Tie. That's true. At least tie, you're tie. Saying at least you're saying draw instead of tie.
Yeah, that's well, it for I us get yelled today. At when I say
Stop
that.
It. That's it for us today. For Kevin Barker and Arden Zwelling, I'm Jeff Blair. Thanks for joining us on Baseball Central. Have a great day, everybody.